disclosure, I preached on this text 3 years ago. And once these images get started, you may recognize them because they are the exact same ones that I used. I've been a pastor for only 2 months, and I'm already recycling material. But I'm not sorry. These images, once they appear, captured my imagination 3 years ago, and they still do. In fact, a month ago, I was at the Women Doing Theology conference at the seminary, and I saw this image. It's called The Windsock Visitation, and it's by Brother Mickey O'Neill McGrath. It was in a seminar on images of women in the Bible. There they are. And I loved it. And I bought a copy of it for my office, and I hung it up there. And then when I was looking through these images, I saw that image in this collection. So I had seen it before. So if I didn't remember all of the images from 3 years ago, I'm sure that you didn't. And part of the reason we're reusing this banner is that I remembered it from my own childhood. Beth Miller made it in 1994. I was a fourth grader, and I don't remember all the pieces of it, but I remembered Mary and Elizabeth, this beautiful image of two pregnant kinswomen, full of life, full of God. That image stayed with me. I always dreamed of being pregnant at the same time as my sisters. That never happened. But these images continue to excite something in me, in their newness and their familiarity. In this season of Advent, we need new ways of hearing and seeing old texts. We need new ways to breathe life into them. So this morning, I did not craft my own original, innovative take on this beautiful story of Mary and Elizabeth. Instead, I am recycling again. It's new to me, but I did not craft it. It's by a woman named Catherine Cavanaugh, and I thought it was just too good not to use in its 10-minute entirety. Because anytime I find something that brings a biblical character to life, my heart is drawn into the story in a new way. And I hope your heart is drawn into Elizabeth's story this morning, too. But before I do that, I want to name that part of what I have been wrestling with since I became your pastor is what it means to bear the griefs and losses of the people in this congregation. What does it mean to bear someone else's pain, to carry a grief that is not your own? I joyfully said yes to being your pastor. I have wanted this for a while now, the liturgically coordinated outfits, the authority of the role, the worship planning, the women's pastor peer groups, and the long pastoral team meetings. And all of those things are as good as I had hoped. But nothing quite prepared me for what it would mean to bear all the joys and sorrows of this particular congregation, the way that your weighty things would inhabit me, would dwell inside of me, that your particular griefs and stories would lodge themselves within me, next to my own. And so I take courage from the stories of Mary and Elizabeth, who also joyfully said yes, without fully comprehending what it would mean to bear pain and God and babies and a story that was bigger than themselves. It's not just the images of Mary and Elizabeth that compel me. It is the women themselves who are models of wisdom and courage, compassion and imagination. Women who said, yes, here I am. I will bear what I have been chosen to bear. And I'm grateful that they had each other. Just as I'm grateful for good colleagues and mentors who are helping me to carry this new thing. And I'm grateful for this imaginative retelling of Mary and Elizabeth's remarkable story of unexpected, expected babies. I nestle my infant son, John, peering at his face, flickering in the candlelight, this future holy prophet who nevertheless awakens me in the dark hours with his hunger for milk, his need to grow, his intent to leave me someday. I sigh. My back aches, and tonight I cannot sleep anyway. I shift John, whose eyes open for a moment and then close again, as he settles once more into suckling. At 6 months, John lights up my life. This miracle child, this angelic gift, he still leaves me in awe. I look down at him, draw a gnarled finger through his fine hair. I kiss the smoothness of his baby skin, so different from my own. He is a child of creation, this one, of sunlight and rainfall, of sand and stone. He already sits on his own, sifting sand between his fingers, studying the grains, watching the reflected light and colors that cause them to sparkle, something I haven't noticed in years. He laughs and pats the earth. He wonders at insects and marvels at water. And I worry about how I will keep up with him once he can crawl, once I can no longer contain him. He cries only when brought back inside, reaching back for the light. Sometimes at night even, I have to take him outside to calm him. As if reading my thoughts, John opens his eyes, squirms, gives a cry, and stretches toward the door, brightly lit on this moonless night. I appreciate the chance to move, to straighten old joints, and I carry my son to the door. Judea sparkles in the deep night, starlight kindling my soul. I breathe deeply and hold John close. Has there ever been a night like this? The heavens blaze, an iridescent transparency drawing me out. And John squeals, almost jumps from my arms, reaching both hands up. A new star hovers on the horizon. Impossible, I think, and then I stop myself. For what is impossible to a woman who gives birth at my age? What can ever be impossible again? Before John was born, I had loved the stories of Hannah and Sarah, but perhaps I had to admit I had not taken them seriously. Isolated in my childless status, I had struggled for years with frustration, enduring the imagined smug pity of mothers, of babies and toddlers and youth. The stories had comforted me, but left me feeling alone too. Where was the truly childless woman in Scripture? With Zechariah, I pursued the model of unfailing hospitality, like Abraham and Sarah. I welcomed the sick, the lonely, the stranger, the grieving. I had come to find comfort in who I was, a motherless child, a childless mother to all, a giver, a person. I had said, "Here I am," to any who came my way. I built a family of all those who needed me. They came from near and far for comfort, advice, friendship, and sanctuary. And I realized at last that I would be all right without a child, that God's presence filled me anyway, comforted me, and called me. On the day Zechariah had stumbled home from the temple, mute, shocked, needing me, I had struggled to believe, to understand. And then the pregnancy that followed, unbelievable, impossible, true. The women, the whole community had celebrated my pregnancy, even through Zechariah's continued silence. Not that anyone had known at first, of course. For the first 5 months, I had hardly believed it was happening. I had hidden myself away, afraid that I would lose the baby, until the day of Mary's arrival. I look down at my wide awake baby, my unexpected, expected one, and I think of Mary. I had been pounding grain in the enclosure behind my house. The sensation calmed me. I could get lost in the rhythm and the heat, sweat evaporating in the dry, breezy air. But I knew Mary was there, even before I heard her call. A sure knowledge, a certainty, and I turned and dropped the pestle, and I ran. I felt myself carried on wings, despite my heaviness, despite my age, to my young cousin. and John leapt within me, taking my breath. And I knew then that my baby was safe, that there was salvation within the woman before me, not just for me, so long ignored because of my barrenness, but for all forgotten women, for all the downtrodden, excluded, ridiculed, harassed. I reached out to Mary, and I felt my baby leap again, and I hailed the young woman. And Mary had answered me, recognizing my son, the first woman to do so. Mary reached out her hands to my belly, filling it with fire and hope. My soul, too, had magnified the Lord, even as Mary said the words. For women do not operate alone. No one does. Everything came clear to me at once, like a vision, a tilting of the world. Eternity stretched between me and ahead, my whole history and that of my people suddenly coming into focus. Sarah laughing and Hannah beseeching, and Abraham and Moses saying, "Here I am, here I am, for the Lord was with us all. Here I am." My heart whispered it too, even as Mary's words catapulted through me and out to the world. Words that I would not forget, even if Zechariah did not write them down, did not record it as he did everything these days. And indeed, I realized it was possible to have God within me and outside of me, that my soul existed as mine and God's, just as Mary remained full of God, full of grace, even as Mary remained Mary. I gathered my cousin to me, knowing that the young woman would be punished for her pregnancy, knowing that the road ahead would be worse for Mary than it had been for me, the barren one. For Mary had chosen courage. Mary had chosen risk. To be pregnant before marriage, to be pregnant with God, the world stretched lonely and dangerous if Joseph did not understand. Mary and I prepared each other, stood before our God, talked long into the night, breaking the silence that had wrapped itself around me ever since I conceived and Zechariah lost his voice to the angel. And on that night, when the pains finally assaulted me, and to my joy and sorrow, I brought a yelling, squalling John out of me forever and into the world in a splash of water and blood, Mary had been with me, had caught the infant in her own hands, and held him briefly to her own belly before handing him over to me, still soaked, still soiled, this boy who loved sand and water. And the whole hut had exploded with stars, with sun, with love, with God. The next day, Mary had left early, prepared, ready. And now, on this bright, star-scoured night, I cannot turn my thoughts away from Mary. Her time would be close. No, I realize, looking at the star, her time is now. John grows quiet, transfixed by the night sky, eyes wide as if he sees through it, sees beyond it. In the distance, low down over the fields, the starlight shines brighter than anything I've ever seen. I lower myself to the sandy earth and stand John on my lap as he strains to move toward the light. A warm hand on my shoulder tells me Zechariah has joined us. He drapes a blanket around us and crouches down beside us, all three of us facing the bright east. The stars sparkle silent in the air, all sound disappearing in the expectant void. We breathe together, this small family in rhythm with that other family, and I feel my belly tighten and expand with every prayer I send to Mary. And then it seems as if the whole sky expands, grows, and John gives a leap, and I know, as the tears fall down my face, as I feel Zechariah's grip, that eternity has come. "Here I am," I whisper to John, to God, to Mary, to the world, "Here I am." And I hear it echo back to me from the stars, from the world, from John, from Mary, from God.